Today on Maine Calling, the passage of time throughout our lives. In recent years, have you felt as though time is moving more quickly than it used to? Do you think to yourself, is it really 2026? How did that happen? If so, you are not alone. Many of us feel as though time accelerates as we age. Why? Well, it's complex. In fact, there is a whole field of study around time perception. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with one of the researchers about how we as humans perceive time. Why does time fly when you're having fun? Why does it stand still in other instances? Our perception of time is influenced by emotions, routines, and events in the world. Today's program is part of our series, Life Passages, focused on aging and life stages. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, an active 55-plus lifestyle community with a 230-acre nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Time keeps on ticking, but sometimes it feels as though it's ticking at different speeds. There are people who study this phenomenon. Their research looks at the perception of time. We have one of those researchers with us today. Dr. Martin Wiener is associate professor with the Department of Psychology at George Mason University. I want to note that today's program is part of our year-long series, Life Passages, looking at issues relating to aging and the stages of life. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you marvel at how time flies? Do you ever wonder if you can slow it down? Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Wiener, Martin, thank you so much for being here on Maine Calling for this topic that is so interesting to me, and I'm sure to all of our audience members. You know, I think all of us have experienced this sensation of time accelerating or compressing as we get older. But before we talk about that phenomenon, I want to sort of go a little bigger even and talk about what time is. I mean, How do you think about this whole concept of time?
Well, first, thank you for having me here. I really appreciate this, and I hope the conversation will be interesting and illuminating. So for time, there's sort of many different ways you can approach it, right? There's the physical standpoint of what is time, what is now. And from a psychological perspective, we've kind of put that to the side. We say, okay, whether or not time exists from a physics standpoint, we know that we perceive it. We know that it's something that we sense in our environment. We know that it's something that we have an intuitive understanding of, like when time seems to fly by or when it seems to drag on. And really what we're trying to understand is how that happens, how the brain builds that, how our minds conceive of it, how we think about it. So really, you know, you get into large existential questions when you start digging into time, and you sort of have to tune that part out a little bit in order to really focus on how do we understand and think about the present moment and time across our lifespan.
You say the present moment and time across our lifespan. I understand there are people who specialize in one and the other. It's not just that those of you who study time perception do it all.
Yeah, so there's many scales of time. And when you tell someone that you study time, that everyone thinks of something different. Time could be what we're going through right now, kind of the immediate moment, the immediate present. It could also be how you think about what happened in the last 5 minutes or what's going to come in the next 5 minutes. And there's people who study that, the kind of immediate present. There's people who study time on slightly longer scales, say, long-term planning and memory of what might have happened in the past few hours, what you're going to do tomorrow. And you can go even farther out from that, kind of how we think about time in terms of days, weeks, years, even. So there's very, very different scales in how people think about time and how people study it.
Okay, so let's talk about the subject at hand, which is why time goes so fast as we age. I think many of us have had the sensation of picking up our phone and, it says a photo pops up and it says 10 years ago today or 15 years ago today. And you look at that photo and you think, no, that was not 10 years ago. Or I heard something on NPR recently talking about when the film Moonlight came out 10 years ago. And I thought, really? That feels like last year. Why is that, Martin? Why am I feeling that way?
We don't have a firm 100% answer, but we do have ideas. We do have thoughts about this. So certainly there is that experience that everyone reports. That as we age, it feels like time is going faster. That the interval between events is just getting shorter and shorter. And when you reflect back on things, it's like, how could that have happened? It's like so long ago, it feels like it was just yesterday. It's a bit complicated like when you start to think about this, but we call this retrospective time. So kind of like looking at time in the past, which is different from prospective time, from kind of looking ahead of like how much time do I have up until a certain event. And when we think about it, like typically we associate it with the intensity and the denseness of memory. So the memories that we are collecting and encoding and putting into things. And there is this general finding that the more, memories that you have for an event, the denser the memories are, the longer it seems to last in time, or the longer you think it lasted. So if an event happened where many, many things were occurring, it was very busy, and all those things were new. That interval will seem to be dilated in your mind and memory. Whereas if there's something where not a lot happened, something that was boring, something that was routine, something where there's no expectations that are being violated, that event in turn will seem compressed. It'll seem to be very brief. And it's really about how the brain lays down memories. If there's something that's important, that's relevant, that's salient, the brain's going to record that. And as a result, it will seem to be a longer interval of time. But if there's something that's kind of routine, simple, basic, not something you really need to know or record, the brain will kind of skip over those things, we think as a way of saving space. And as a result, you'll wind up having a shorter compressed interval of how long you think the event lasted for.
So when we're a kid, time moves more slowly because almost everything is new and we're laying down these fresh memories and they're work for our brain. And so it all seems a lot more at a slower pace than for now, when so many things that we do every day, we've done 100, 1,000, 10,000 times before.
Right, exactly. That's the going theory right now, at least, is that it has to do with this encoding of memories. And when you're kids, everything is new. Every experience you go through is going to be new and different. And so, of course, those things are going to seem dilated and long because you're just packing in so much new information for the first time.
So, I have to confess though, even though I love to be efficient, I love to have systems in place so I don't have to think about certain things. I also want to slow down time, Martin. It's going too fast for my liking. How do I do that, or do I really want to do that?
It's fine because it's a complicated question, a complicated thing to think about. Because people have asked me before when they know I say time, oh, that's actually the number one thing I hear is people saying, how do you slow down time? How can I do it? I want time to go slower. It's going too fast. And I've thought about this, and what I come back usually saying, well, most of the time, if time slows down, it's not a good thing. Typically, what we're talking about, this is on reflection, time slowing down. But a lot of times when time slows down, it's usually in situations where we are bored or unhappy, or if we're going through something that is upsetting or even traumatic. There's this general sense that while we have that memory effect I was telling you, there's an opposite effect, which is when we're in situations that we just don't like, that we're unhappy with, or again, if we're waiting for something and we're waiting, 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 the more we think about time and its passage, the slower it becomes. So typically I say, well, there's a bit of a warning there. You don't actually want time to slow down in the moment because typically that happens in situations that are not positive, that are not good. So you want to slow down. What I tell people is that really there is an advantage to trying, new things and trying to encode new memories, and also being aware of the fact that there is this trade-off, I think helps. At least it's helped me in terms of being able to kind of appreciate things and try to lay down more memories of routines that otherwise would have just, blown by, I think.
It's interesting you talk about time slowing down in terms of, when we have to wait for something for and how slow it feels. I'm wondering if that's related or if it's a whole different thing to when time almost stops. I think many of us had been in the experience of maybe being in a car accident where the moments just seem to go so slowly, almost like frame by frame by frame. Is that all related to what we're talking about right now?
Yeah, so there's been studies of this of people trying to understand how time slows down during, traumatic or frightening events. And certainly we've found that if you show someone something that's frightening or scary, that event will seem to last longer than if I show them something that's benign or calming or simple. So we know that frightening or rousing things do seem to dilate time in the moment, which we think is what underlies what people experience when they have like a car accident or something that. And what's interesting is that again, it seems to come back to this memory encoding ability that I mentioned, which is in those events, people tend to latch on to a lot of memory details during them. They're not always the right details. Like if you ask people who have been in car accidents or in something else traumatic what they remember lots of incidental details, like what music was playing, like on the radio at that exact moment, what exactly was being said. By another person, like what the sun was like, glinting off a reflection. Like they remember all these incidental details that don't really matter to like the overall memory of it, but it's like their encoding has been ramped up in that moment. And it leads to this weird kind of dilation effect that's occurring.
I understand that the pandemic, COVID pandemic, sort of opened an interesting door for researchers because so many people had different experiences with time during that. For me, I think that it, in retrospect, seems to have happened really quickly, but for other people, it was the opposite, correct? And what did we learn because of the pandemic about how humans perceive time?
Yeah, the pandemic taught us a lot about the passage of time. It's interesting because like this gives a perfect example of that difference between prospection and retrospection. So prospectively, in the pandemic, many people were bored. Many people were stuck inside of their homes during lockdown, and it felt like time was slowing down in that moment. There was these anecdotal reports everywhere across the press that people felt like time was slowing down. That's why we called it Blur's Day. The idea that every day just started to seem to become the same. But years after the pandemic, when people look back on it, it seemed like it just went right by. People couldn't really tell you what they did or what happened during it. It seemed like it was kind of compressed, which again is that difference between people laying down new memories. There wasn't anything actually happening. But when this first happened, and people started reporting all these timing things, a lot of us in the time research community started talking, and we said, this might be, a real opportunity here to understand how people's sense of time is changing. So there were a number of studies done all across the world, in various countries, where we set up online surveys, and online reports where people could report what their passage of time was like in a given week during lockdowns. And also get, in some cases, reports of time after the lockdowns had been lifted. And we built this very large database from it. It's actually called the Blur's Day database, that you can find online, where we have all these judgments that people can go and mine and look for different reports. And generally, what we found was that, in some cases, largely people felt like time was slowing down, but it was really pretty split, where some people felt like time was speeding up during the pandemic. Other people felt like it was slowing down. There were a lot of small idiosyncrasies there. So older adults typically said time was slowing down compared to younger adults, who didn't really report much change. Men and women differed, where women were more likely to say that time was slowing down compared to men. It didn't seem to matter about like baseline mental health, but what did seem to matter was social involvement. So people who had strong social networks, people who lived with other people or lived in environments where they had friends who checked in on them or talked to them, those people felt like time was either normal or speeding up. Whereas people who didn't have that, people who were alone or didn't have very strong social networks, for them it felt like time was really slowing down. And that was one of the strongest predictors we found, was kind of like social involvement. And again, this kind of connects to this idea of memory encoding, is that if you've got other people that you're engaging, novel new events too when you're in lockdown, like, oh wow, I get to talk to someone, I get to a Zoom meeting with them or whatever, that's going to be a new thing. And it's going to give you that dilated experience. But if it's just the same thing over and over again, it's going to, just seem to stretch out in the moment, but be compressed in your mind when you look back on it.
I wonder if that's why people say, you and I are both parents, when they say things about when their children are little, saying the days move so slowly, but the years move so fast, that the days are so rote and routine that seems to stretch out, especially those years when you're waiting for your kid to be able to talk to you or to be able to participate in activities. But then when you look back, you think, I mean, is that related to sort of what we experienced during COVID? Or is it a
We
different
think
phenomenon?
so. No, we think that it's related. I don't know that there's been work specifically looking at parents, although there certainly should be, speaking as one. But definitely there is that experience that if you're with kids, there is a lot of routine and there is a lot of boredom. And boredom especially is something that leads to this dilated sense of time in the moment, even though it's like a wonderful thing. But on the other hand, there's many other things that affects parents, like sleep deprivation is a big one. And when you're sleep deprived, you don't encode memories as well. Like you don't remember as well what happened. And that can also contribute to this sense that you're kind of stuck in this eternal moment, but then blink and then suddenly your children are grown up. And they say, how can you not remember this thing? This thing was a clear memory for me, whereas for you, it just, got all jumbled together.
That's so interesting you say that because my children cannot believe some of the things I don't remember. And so I'm glad to have some affirmation here, Martin.
So there is another thing you might be interested in memory research. So there's this thing called the reminiscence bump, which is a real phenomenon that's been known for a number of decades now. So the reminiscence bump is a thing that if you ask people to write down memories that they remember at various ages, what you find is there's this bump in when people have the clearest, strongest memories, and it's usually around from 15 to 25 or so. There's just this intensity of people being able to remember things, but then you hit this trough where all of a sudden, when people are around, late 30s, 40s, into 50s, where suddenly they just can't remember anything. Like they reach this temporary period where it's just, I can't really tell you much of what happened during this time frame. And it resolves itself. Like as you get into your 50s and 60s, memories seem to kind of come back. But there's this, bump of where you have very high memories and this trough where you don't have very good memories between your 20s and your 40s. And researchers have been figuring out for a while, but it also corresponds with the sense of time difference that in the 20s and 30s, like or early 20s, everything is laid down. It's a very large time scale in your memories, but your 40s and 50, things like that, it gets compressed.
Wow. Well, we are talking with Martin Wiener. He's at George Mason University. He's an associate professor of psychology, and we are talking about this concept of time, specifically why time accelerates when you, or at least feels like it's accelerating as you age, but also just how we perceive of time, especially in different phases of our life. What are your questions? You can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our show today, all about the passage of time, how we humans perceive time, and what that means as we age. My guest today is Martin Wiener, who is an associate professor of psychology at George Mason University. His area of focus is the perception of time. We invite you to join the conversation. If you're a younger person, we want to hear from you about how you perceive the passage of time. Does it move too slowly for you? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Dr. Marilyn Gallucci, who is a professor at the University of New England, where she is Director of Geriatric Education and Research. Thanks so much for joining us today, Marilyn.
It's great to be invited. Thank you, Jim.
Marilyn, in your work with older adults, what do you observe about the perception of time and how quickly or slowly time passes and how this shift affects people?
And as an older adult myself, I'm 71 right now, soon to be 72. Everything that I've been listening to from Dr. Weiner and the information that I read on him, I think those perceptions is very personal and subjective. And so when you've met one older adult, you've met one older adult, that everybody will have a different way of looking at that. I think overall, though, you'll hear any of us say, wow, that went fast. You know, what happened to that past year or those 40 years I've been with my spouse? I think that's common and usual.
And I'm wondering if for some people it's affects them in a deep way. I mean, are there any people who maybe need to get therapy or help because of this profound feeling?
Again, Jennifer, that's so personal that I wouldn't even want to conjecture about that. But depression in older adults is not common. It's not, you know, it's not associated with being older. And so if anybody does have depression about this in particular or any issue, it's very important to see somebody about that and to have outlets that can help reframe the way you think. For those, I always have this kind of play on words that, you know, if somebody or I even think about, oh my God, I just feel like I'm nowhere. And then what I do is just adjust that and reframe and say, ah, I'm actually now here. Just move that W over. And really, the only time that we can control is right now, by being in the present and being aware of this moment. So many times I work with medical students, they're ahead of themselves, they're behind themselves. We all do this. It's kind of a part of our culture to always be ahead and behind ourselves. And yet, if we could be now here and be in the present, I think that's where peace exists. Easier said than done, but an interesting notion for sure.
Yeah, well, one thing I'm thinking as you talk, Marilyn, is about the idea that I've read that people who are older often say that their 60s, 70s, 80s are their happiest times. And I'm wondering if part of it is because they're able to realize that every moment is precious, and that part of the reason they realize that is because time has seems to have moved so quickly.
Well, it's a great statement, Jennifer. Again, it's going to be personal and it is going to be based on their perceptions. But I think overall, when looking back for myself, looking back on my life and getting to a point where I can actually start thinking about reframing how I view things, how I want to respond, that I think I'd like to think we attain wisdom as we age. We pay attention, hopefully, many of us pay attention to the things that we have been through, what we've learned from those, and try to bring mindfulness into our actions, and especially kindness and love. For me, my life is so full because I love the How many now? Close to 700 medical students that I work with across their 4 years of medical school. They are just so, they're struggling, right? I mean, we all struggle regardless of age and where we are in our life. But the bottom line is we connect and we make memories together, and there's significance in there in those relationships that I think, going back to what Dr. Weiner said, is having those new experiences and those moments. And those can happen with everyday encounters with people, can really go deep for us. And I think opening ourselves to that is critically important.
Well, Dr. Gallucci, it's always so wonderful to hear from you. Dr. Marilyn Gallucci is a gerontologist with the University of New England. Thank you so much. It strikes me, Dr. Weiner, Martin, as we talk about this, that a couple things are coming, bubbling up that we hear about in other disciplines as well, which is this renewed interest in mindfulness and also renewed emphasis on social connection.
Right. To the mindfulness thing, that's particularly interesting. So I said before, most of the time when time slows down, it's not a good thing. And that's largely true. Like I said, it happens in frightening situations. But we are starting to see that in one situation where time seems to slow down, but it's positive, are when people are meditating or involved in something like meditation, a kind of mindfulness or awareness of the present moment. Just kind of like, again, this idea of being here now and being aware of this and letting things kind of pass over you and through you. That state of being seems to be associated with a sense of time slows down in that moment, but not seen as a negative thing. You're not bored, you're not unhappy. You're kind of in a more tranquil state. People have also linked time slowing down in situations where they feel awe. So this idea of being awe-inspired or just overwhelmed by something, something beautiful, something amazing, that's kind of a general catch-all term. People report that time slows down in those situations as well that can equally match ones that are frightening, but it's overall seen as a good thing and a positive thing. So I definitely think being aware of that, being, again, mindful of it, as was said, is important and probably helpful to mental health.
We have so many emails coming in. I'll go to this quick email from Dave, who writes, "Now at 68 years old, it often seems like time is somehow stuck on fast forward." Hear, hear, Dave, I hear you. And then John on Facebook writes, "An old professor explained it to me like this once. When you're 10 years old, a year is a tenth of your life. When you're 50 years old, that same year is a 50th of your life. Of course it went by faster. It was only 1/5 as long." And Martin, is there any research to back up this sense?
Yeah, there is that notion that it's a smaller proportion of your life and that older adults, these units of time are kind of, you know, going to be smaller relative. But there's not really any evidence that backs that up on how the brain thinks about time. Again, you know, if you go to try to ask people about this in terms of proportions or things like that, you don't find that they match up pretty well with how fast the experience is. As was also said, there's huge individual differences between people. So what one person's perception of time speeding up is like is very different from another person's. And it's going to vary. And if it was simply a proportion of your life, we would all kind of be the same. We would all be pretty uniform in that because it would just happen relative to our lifespan. But in terms of our experience, we don't really have a good handle on how the brain understands these units. There is no sense of like, well, I've experienced, this is 1/10 of what I've experienced. Again, it seems to come down to what is routine versus what is novel and new, and the brain prioritizing novel and new things in terms of laying them down as memories, which lead to longer experiences, as opposed to routine things. And there we do see differences, that people who are more routine-based seem to say that things seem to speed by more often, or people who are more novelty-based seem to say that, or seem less likely to say that time is speeding up as they age.
So is the moral of the story, we all ought to be trying new things or maybe balancing routine with novelty?
So people have said that because I don't want this to reduce to a platitude of saying, just go out and try new things or, you know, take up new things. Certainly that's good advice. But what, you know, we also find is that the brain has to find a balance between these two things. You know, we need to have routines interspersed with new things. We can't just be doing new things all the time. And you can see this in young children too, is that you can kind of go a mile a minute recording new things, and then you're exhausted. Then you are exhausted, you are hungry. And for a kid, that might be easier than it is for an older adult, where you can experience new things, you can lay down these new memories, but then you need to go back to your routine, go back to your basic things where everything is predictable and everything is the same as a way of recovering from that and kind of renewing yourself before you go back out again. So I think probably the best thing, and again, this is all just speculation, but probably the best thing is to find a balance between routine things and new things that matches your lifestyle so that you're not getting overwhelmed or exhausted, but also not falling into complete monotony in all the things that you're doing.
Here's an email from Lori, which makes me chuckle. Who among us hasn't been in the front seat of a car on a long car ride and felt the repeated thumps of a kid kicking the back of their seat? It's the "are we almost there yet" moment that almost all of us experienced as a child and that we sadly forget to appreciate as adults. So, you've got kids. Have they said that to you, Martin? Are we there yet?
Oh yes, yeah, absolutely. Definitely for them, they're looking around, they're trying to see where everything is, and they're waiting for something. That's the I think the biggest thing with kids is they're anticipating. And the more you anticipate something, like if we've all been on hold and a hold, thing might say on the line, like, oh, it's like you've got 5 minutes or there's five people ahead of you, and we form an estimate of like, okay, this is how long I have to wait. And then the closer you get to that, or the farther out it becomes, the longer it feels like you're waiting. In terms of like the road example, that's a particular one. There's another phenomenon called the return trip effect, where when you're first traveling out somewhere that you've never been to before, it seems much longer than the return trip. The return trip always seems to be kind of compressed in a way relative to like the initial trip out. And people have studied that too, again, because it seems to come back to this. In one case, you're laying down a new memory, and in another case, you're just repeating that, and you've already encoded it, so it's going to take less time to return.
Oh, interesting. I have noticed that. I never thought about it that way. An email here from Kathy. How does being on social media affect one's sense of time? Good question, Kathy.
Yeah, so that's, I think we've all experienced, anyone who's used social media has felt that experience of getting stuck where you're on it and then suddenly you break out of it and you have no idea how much time has passed. That seems to be this phenomenon that when you are, it's the opposite of boredom, which is something that some of these social media outlets are very good at manipulating. Because the opposite of boredom isn't necessarily having fun, it's that being occupied. And when you're not bored and being occupied, you're not thinking about time. You're not focusing on it at all. And in those cases, you lose track of it. You have no idea how much time has passed. So if you're just scrolling from one post to another or video to another, you lose an anchor for time. You lose an ability to track how long, that event has lasted. And so as a result, people don't have very good reports of how long they've been doing one of these things for, like being on Instagram or TikTok or any of these other, social media outlets.
It's interesting because Kathy's question was about social media, but as you were talking, I was thinking that could also be said for other activities. For example, people who like to do a crossword puzzle or even a jigsaw puzzle, you could lose your sense of time.
Yeah. So what's neat about this is there is this, almost hedonic, pleasurable aspect to time passing by quickly. We expect fun things to fly by, and such that if something does fly by, we kind of recode it as a positive.
Oh shoot, we lost your audio for just a second.
Oh,
So let's oh, you're
sorry.
back now. So you had said if something flies by, we recode it as a positive thing. What did you say after that?
Correct. Well, so what I was going to say was, if you're waiting on hold, for example, and you're told you're going to be on hold for 15 minutes, but then it only goes by in 2 minutes, okay? That you'll rate that as positive. You'll say, "Oh, well, this was great." You'll be pleased. You'll wind up saying it was a pleasurable experience. And people have done studies on this where there's a great series of studies done about 10 years ago now, where they brought people in and had them do very monotonous, boring tasks. Very kind of simple kind of tasks, like take all these pieces and move all these things around, and they had a clock on the wall that was either running at the right rate or was running at a faster rate. Okay, and they said like, oh, you'll be done in the next amount of time. And afterwards, they had to rate how pleasurable the experience was. And people who felt like time or were tricked into thinking that time had passed by quickly rated it as a more pleasurable experience. because they thought, well, it flew by doing this thing. It must have been enjoyable. I must have had a fun time doing it. So just in how we think about these things relates to our experience of them in terms of whether or not we see them as a good thing or not.
Wow, what an interesting experiment. We'll go to David calling from Shapley. Hi, David, go ahead.
Good morning. I wanted to ask about marijuana. So when people smoke marijuana, we have a perception that everything is slowing down. And I know humans make endogenous cannabinoids. And I was wondering if part of the perception when we age that things are going faster, if maybe adults or older people are making fewer of those endogenous cannabinoids, which would help contribute to that idea that time is passing faster.
So, great question. In terms of neurochemistry involved, we do know that cannabinoids are involved. People do talk about the relation between marijuana and time slowing down. But what we think it relates to more closely is a different brain chemical, that's dopamine, which has been linked very, very strongly to the passage of time, both in humans and in animals, where you can give them things that increase dopamine and time seems to speed up, and you can give animals things that decrease dopamine and time seems to slow down. So we know this experimentally. We've done this in animals. One thing to notice also in humans, as we age, there is a reduction in dopamine receptors where people wind up just having fewer of them, like in a lower density. That may relate more to this difference in the experience of the passage of time, as you're talking about, as people age. That we don't know. We know that these two things exist, but we haven't linked them yet together. But we do know that dopamine plays a strong role in your sense of time, which also may relate to why sometimes pleasurable things can be associated with, a dilated moment, because in those pleasurable events, you have an increase in dopamine.
Wow, David, thank you for your question. We do need to take another quick break. Our number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. How do we perceive time, and how does the passage of time affect us differently as we get older? It is a big concept, but here to tackle that today is our guest, Martin Wiener, who is a psychology professor at George Mason University, and this is his specialty. Share your comments and questions. Our email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I have an email here from Beth. I understand that some people with ADHD have time blindness, that the ADHD person in my life doesn't do well with understanding an hour. I'm not sure they understand the passing of years. Any thoughts?
Yeah, so in ADHD in particular, there's a lot of reports and issues with time. As you say, as the listener says, time blindness is kind of at this point a core feature of ADHD, with a lot of people reporting problems with it. We think that certainly there has been a lot of work on this. People have studied ADHD and time. I've studied ADHD and time. My son has ADHD, and so I definitely understand that experience. We do know that it relates to their ability to focus on things and attend to things. That again, if they are not attending to events appropriately, they tend to lose track of how long an event has occurred. As far as why, we know again that there are differences in brain chemistry in people with ADHD. It does affect dopamine, as I said, which we know is linked to a sense of time. And we do know also that giving people with ADHD medications that affect the dopamine system normalizes their sense of time. So if you give them Ritalin or Adderall, there is this normalization of time where you can test them on these tasks and ask them to estimate intervals of time, and you find that they get better. More appropriate when you give them medications. Even beyond ADHD, there's many, many other pathologies that are affected in a way that their sense of time is disrupted, and it does seem to link back to dopamine. People with Parkinson's disease, schizophrenia, dementia as well, although that seems to be more, connected to again, memory encoding, more of a dip, which is a different kind of time, as we've established.
So that is really interesting, because schizophrenia and Parkinson's are really very different, but both of these diagnoses affect somebody's perception of time.
Yeah, and in different ways too. In schizophrenia, the sense of time can kind of, it's pretty heterogeneous across individuals. Some people with schizophrenia seem to have time speeding up. They report it seems like everything around them is going in fast motion. Sometimes it can be the exact opposite, where they say it feels like everything has slowed down. So there's a lot of variance there that we think relates to differences in subtypes of schizophrenia, say positive versus negative symptoms. But Parkinson's disease also, we do see this. We do see them having a disruption. Parkinson's disease tends to go more in one direction, which is this sense that things around them are speeding up, and that their own sense of time is kind of slowing down in a way that they can't keep track of events as well. Again, if you give them dopamine therapy, these things tend to normalize. But it's not, something that's a perfect solution.
And I understand that sometimes it has to do with how we perceive what we see and what we hear,
when
we perceive those at different speeds. Now, that doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, which is one of the disruptions in schizophrenia. This is getting into kind of the work that my lab focuses on, which is really this present moment, which is really something pretty tricky. The brain has this problem where visual input is pretty sluggish. So it takes a relative while for light to hit your retina, to go into your brain, for you to recognize something as a picture. But it's pretty quick for sound to enter your ears and get processed by your brain in order to tell whether a sound is coming from your left side, your right side, above you or below you, or what that sound is. And the brain has to align these things so that sounds and visual inputs and touch and all other sensory inputs seem to all be happening at the same time. So what the brain does is kind of creates a bit of a lag for everything, where it says, okay, I'm going to take a little extra moment here, a little bit of a lag to align everything. And in some pathologies like schizophrenia, that lag can get disrupted, where sounds and their respective, visual inputs are now misaligned. Say people's words are not associated with their lips anymore, or they're having disruptions between, like events happening in the environment, colliding, not giving the right sound. And as a result, people in that case may start to misattribute things, misattribute where sounds are coming from, and so on. So definitely the sensory input has to be kind of wound up with the sense of time, in a way that we make everything appear cohesive or as a whole.
We'll go to Larry calling from Milton, New Hampshire. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. A couple of points. Goethe, memory is the one paradise from which man cannot be expelled. Memory is destructive terror. A memory is a salve to the conscience, and that memory is a reconstruction of time. And last question for Dr. I got out after a master's. Helen Keller's memory, which would be neither visual nor auditory. Points to think about.
Yeah, well, so it's interesting. So there's been a lot of work recently in people studying aphantasia, which is a whole other, you could probably do a whole other show on that. So aphantasia is this inability of people to imagine things. So people with aphantasia seem to be unable to kind of visualize anything in their minds. And there's an opposite to that. We also find people with hyperphantasia, people who have unusually rich imaginations, where if you ask them to visualize something, difficult for them to, tell whether they're just imagining it or whether it's actually there. That seems to relate to their memories. So people with aphantasia, if you ask them to remember something, the facts of an event, but they couldn't tell you the sensory experience of it. They couldn't reconstruct that event as like a kind of, video or chronicle in their mind. They could give you like the raw details of it, like this is what happened in this particular order, but they couldn't tell you what things looked like or felt like or smelled like or anything like that. And so it's, you know, this is new research, but one thing I've always wanted to do is kind of find these people and see if there is a difference between how they feel time has passed in their, you know, history. Okay. If there's a, if they experience a reminiscence bump, for example, or if they have a difference in how they encode these, seem to change their overall experience of their lives. They still, you know, are normal, happy people who can do regular, you know, things like anybody else. But it does seem to relate to the way in which their memories work, whether they have a visual memory, a kind of, or a sensory memory, you could say, where it's like, when I remember something, I remember not just the details of the event, but I remember how it felt, you know, how it looked, how, you know, all these other things that go along with it, like a more Proustian moment, as opposed to somebody else who just gives raw details. Like the sense of time, if we think it's rooted in our senses, might be different for the people who can sensorily re-experience it versus someone who simply just tells you in rote details what happened.
Larry, thanks for your comments and question. Email here from Dave. I'm a Tai Chi practitioner, and obviously the movements are very slow, but also the time seems to definitely slow down when you are practicing. You become more aware and present of the moment. The other reflection is I worked on a fishing boat in Alaska in 1991 for 75 days. We worked 16-hour shifts, 7 days a week, totally exhausted, consumed with time, wondering when is the next break or when is the next meal going to be. After about 60 days of being on board, this totally calm voice in my head said, time doesn't exist. It's just an illusion. You're just here. Sometimes it's pleasant. Sometimes it's not pleasant. Don't resist it. It was the equivalent of a Zen Satori moment. Of course, I'm still aware of time, but it made me very aware of how I relate to time and that the present moment is dictated by the attitude of concentration and its relationship.
Yeah, great, great comment. And I think those insights really get to the core of how we think about time and how we appreciate time. The Tai Chi part relates to mindfulness. Like, again, any kind of really present moment focus, whether it's meditation or yoga or Tai Chi or something, especially things where you're moving your body, but in like a very like kind of mindful way, I think can give you this appreciation of the present moment and this sense of time, or this dilation of time, that makes you appreciate it and understand it and overall have a positive experience. To the other point about the fishing boat, that seems to relate to really not having any anchors for time available to you. So I mentioned this before. So there had been work on this done back in the 70s, finding this phenomenon where they would, you know, interview people on the street and they would say, okay, I'm going to ask you a question, answer, you know, as accurately as you can, as fast as you can. And the question is, what day is it? And so then people had to shout out the day, like as fast as they could, you know, it's like not even really thinking about it. And what they found was that the more you got to Wednesday, the slower people were and the more mistakes people made. But the closer you were to the weekend, the faster people were able to answer that question, the more accurately. Like if it was Friday, people said Friday as fast as they could. But if it was Wednesday, people would go Wednesday, you know, they'd say it a bit slower. They'd say it a bit, you know, on more uncertainty, and they might make more mistakes. And this effect was replicated like numerous times. And the general idea is that we kind of form an anchor for ourselves of when we are. And the anchor usually is the weekend. That's like, that's the thing we're all kind of going towards, you know, if you're doing like a 5-day work week. And even for many other things, that's like, that's the anchor people choose. So the farther out we get from that anchor, the harder it is for us to tell, you know, where we are in time as opposed to space. So I think if you're on a fishing boat and really like, what is a day at that point, if it's all the same? And if those things start to just blur together and get washed out, you lose that anchor. But I like that the listener saw this as a positive, like turn this into a positive experience by saying, well, why am I worried about time? Why am I thinking about time when it doesn't really matter? And he's right. It didn't matter in that situation.
I have an email here from Elizabeth. We're almost out of time, so I'm going to read quickly. My mom always told me that the reason it seemed time went so much faster as you aged is because when we're young, we live in the present, not thinking of what else is going to happen, just enjoying, hopefully, what is happening, as opposed to when we get older, we become more focused on schedules and planning and moving ahead. As my mom went through her dementia journey, she eventually returned to a childlike state again, focused on what was happening at the moment without any concept of the next hour or day or year. There are times I have to remind myself to also take that approach and just sit with what is happening and not immediately looking at the next steps. It can be very restful for just a few seconds left. But do you have thoughts about what she's written?
Yeah, I think she's absolutely right. In terms of brain anatomy, because I'll just go back to that. We know that as you age and develop, you know, two brain regions that you know, become stronger, the hippocampus for memory and the prefrontal cortex, which is involved in long-range planning. And when you're young, it's like in those areas are immature and you don't have a lot of memories laid down, then of course you're more in the present moment. And as you get older, you get better at planning. But as you get much older, if those areas start to degrade, then you'll return back, as the listener said, to the present time.
Well, thank you so much. Boy, so many questions. We could go on for another hour. Dr. Martin Wiener, an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at George Mason University. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to learn about organ donation. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.